Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Dr. Lawyer, idiot chief. For my life with songs of grief, with the yellow fear and fearless eyes. You temper all the times, the times I
Welcome to Court Point. Two Dudes Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer, dude, and judge.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Well, how's it going, Tommy?
Well, it's just quarantine. That's all we do is quarantine. No life but quarantine.
I've been working from home pretty much, going to the office periodically to do certain things. Today was the first day I was back in the office for pretty much a typical day.
What was it like? Was it like, man, this is too hard now?
No, it was more like I was working and next thing I knew, it was about 2 o'clock. I hadn't had lunch and I had a lot more to do.
You were more productive, huh?
I was very productive. I found some work to do.
Yeah, I know they talk about this working from home business, and I suspect, though, that people don't get as much done when they're at home as they do when they're in the office. I mean, to tell you the truth.
I don't know. I've had a couple days here at home where I've been pretty productive. I think it depends on how much extraneous type things are going on around you.
Well, that's right, because you get easily distracted. It's like I was watching a little bit of that America's Funniest Home Videos yesterday, and it was all about different things during the quarantine. And here was a guy that was working from home, and he had kept a daily chart of how many times his wife had come in and interrupted him while he was trying to work from home. And it's like on the worst day was like 18 times.
Wow.
She had come in there and done something. So he's like, on the best day here, it was 6. So he said, I kept trying to tell her, I'm working from home. That doesn't mean I am home.
Yeah, just pretend like I'm not even here.
But it's like the homeschooling. I think that, you know, I really believe parents realized how much they love teachers when they started having to teach their own kids at home. Because that's hard. You don't want to work all day and then put your brain back to work trying to do the new math or whatever it is. Whatever math they're doing now, because it's not the same math we did when I was a kid.
Well, it actually is the same math.
I don't think so. It works different. Or my brain does.
Those are the same numbers. You get the same result. It's the same math. 1 + 1 still equals 2.
Yeah, but they look at it differently now. I don't know. There's some way they do it. And you don't, it's like you don't have to get the right answer. You just have to be somewhere in the vicinity.
I don't buy that. I'm not.
Yeah, it's the new Generation Z or whatever way to do it or something.
Well, Stephanie is a second grade teacher, and she's explained it to me and showed it to me, and I do agree that it is a different way of looking at it, but ultimately the math is still the same.
Well, maybe so. It might be my brain that's not the same.
That might be some different reasons too. A
lot of years of abuse.
And don't forget the miles. It's all about the miles.
That's right. There's a lot of miles on that brain. I've done a lot of thinking with it. I even have random thoughts now and then.
A lot of thinking with it. I was thinking a lot of other things, too.
Well, crashing into walls and stuff?
Yeah.
Or people?
Well, we kind of touched on this last week in our episode, and we were talking about citizens' arrests and the Ahmaud Arbery shooting that took place down in Georgia.
Yeah, we were kind of considering doing both these topics together last week. And then with the addition of that and with some more stuff that we found on the social justice warriors, it kind of like, well, this isn't one episode. This is two. So let's make this a separate topic.
And there's a lot of different legal arguments and things that come to light about the whole situation. So it does make it kind of a legally interesting situation. I'm not saying it's an interesting situation because the whole thing is just sad. Mm-hmm. But it does bring to light different legal arguments, which kind of need to be explained and talked about, I think.
Well, and you know, I didn't even know if a citizen's arrest was really a real thing. I mean, I remember we as kids used to say that. We'd run up and when you get mad at somebody or something like that, I'm making a citizen's arrest. I'm making a citizen's arrest on you. You were on my property. You're trespassing. So I'm going to make a citizen's arrest. I didn't know if it was a real thing. I had to look it up to see if a citizen's arrest was a real thing. I thought maybe it was just one of those things kids make up or something.
Well, I know I learned about this in law school to a certain degree, because there is the ability to arrest somebody if you see them in the commission of a felony. And that's basically a common law type situation. So I think probably I learned that when I was studying for the bar exam, because that's when you really learn all the different weird common law type things. Because the bar exam has a lot of common law questions on there. You don't really learn the law of any actual states. You just learn what was common law.
Right.
So we've talked about common law before, and so we'll do a little early legal briefs. Why don't you tell our listeners what common law is, Tommy?
Well, it's stuff that it's common knowledge, and it came from England back when our forefathers were still running around England before they found the good land. And that was the way they used to do things there. So they brought their ways over here.
Yeah, it's common knowledge stuff.
Yeah.
No, it's things that are derived from court cases. So courts have kind of had these rulings over the years, and it's held down, and that's become the law. So it's not actually a written code. It's from court cases and things like that.
Hmm. All right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I also read that it was passed down from England, and that while we call it a citizen's arrest, they call it an any person's arrest. Because you don't have to be a citizen of that country to make the arrest. And so they're clarifying that by calling it an any person arrest.
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting thing I saw too, because if you say it's a citizen's arrest, that would mean like, okay, you have to be a U.S. citizen in order to do that.
Right.
So, but that's not the law here either, where it does exist. You don't have to be a U.S. citizen.
It's just a loose term for it.
Right.
Not a technically accurate term.
There are a lot of arguments at this house where I live that stem from things that are not technical terms, but different terms.
Oh, yeah.
Stephanie will always say something, and I'll differentiate. I'll say, well, no, like, technically speaking, that's not that. And she's like, well, you know what I meant. I said, yeah, I know what you meant, but I just wanted to differentiate because technically that's not what that means.
Well, see, that's what I meant when I said nowadays they're teaching, you just have to be somewhere in the vicinity. She was in the vicinity with what she said, so that was good enough, and that's from a school teacher.
Well, from a lawyer, you have to have kind of precise language when you talk about things. There's different kinds of terms of art that might mean one thing, but then they don't necessarily mean the same thing.
So. Well, I understand that. As a lawyer, you have to deal with other lawyers, so you better be technically correct.
This happens a lot of times when I have abuse and neglect cases, and these are cases involving abuse and neglect of children. And there could be a case where somebody did something and you say like, well, they're alleging that you abused or neglected your child as defined by West Virginia code. So there's certain things that meet the abuse and neglect criteria under the West Virginia code, but we're not talking about like, you know, actual, maybe like hitting your kid or, you know what I mean? So there's kind of a different thing there, because people think when you say abused or neglected, like you mean like physical harm to them. You did that yourself.
No, you could have not had proper nutrition in the house for them to eat or something like that, or feces all over the house. I'm always amazed when I read ones where they say they went in to inspect and there were feces all over the house. Who wants to live like that?
Yep, that's when the poop really hits the fan.
Yeah, I guess so. It hit the floor.
So the citizen's arrest, as you said, it came from England, and that's where most of our common law comes from. There are, in Louisiana, it comes down from French law a little bit, but for the most part, the U.S., we follow English common law. And a lot of people think that this citizen's arrest is something that is antiquated and from a different time and really doesn't have much of a place here in our modern-day society, which I kind of agree with them to a certain extent. And the reason I say that is because in the United States, we all know, there are a lot of guns in play. They're everywhere. So citizen's arrest seems to me to be kind of a dangerous proposition, because when a police officer arrests somebody, they have training to do it and they know what to do. And also, people tend to respect somebody wearing a uniform more when they're trying to arrest them. If you have somebody walking up to, if somebody walked up to me and said, "Hey, I'm making a citizen's arrest, you know, get your hands up," I'd probably be like, "No."
No. What do you mean, no? I just told you I'm making a citizen's arrest. You can't say no.
I don't consent to this. So, I just see it very problematic. You know, I mean, I don't know how. I mean, somebody off the street's going to arrest me because they're saying it? No, I don't think that's American at all.
Yeah, most of the things that I read, they were saying, while this does hold true and this is legal, we advise against doing this.
Well, yeah. I was thinking about this. How many screws loose do you have to have a screw loose basically to cease to go actually and try to arrest somebody? I mean, you have to be crazy to do that. I mean, everyone has guns.
Well, yeah, that's true. They do, but you know, I think sometimes it's more instinct than whatever. There was a picture making the rounds not too long ago. It was from somewhere in England. And a guy is sitting there and he's got like a beer in one hand and a cigarette hanging from his mouth. And he's holding a guy down with his arm twisted up behind his back, and he's kneeling on the guy's back, holding him there just nonchalantly while he's waiting for the cops to show up to get him. And they had seen the guy do something. And so he just grabbed him and tackled him and pinned him there until the police showed up. But he was very nonchalant with his beer in one hand and his cigarette in his mouth.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen videos of people who have attacked people, and other people have come to defense and things like that in jiu-jitsu videos, because that's supposedly the selling point of jiu-jitsu, is you can kind of hold somebody down and isolate them and until help arrives or whatever. So I kind of get that, but you know, and I also see this as there being a bit more of a bright line, because if you're coming to the defense of somebody who is possibly going to suffer bodily harm and you're trying to protect them or protect yourself, I think that's a bit of a different animal than going out and chasing somebody down who you think was possibly a burglary suspect. Like,
well, to me, yeah.
To me, one seems like kind of in the moment, you don't really have much of a choice about it. You need to do that. The other seems like you're making a conscious decision to go out and try to be a law enforcement officer.
Well, there's two things about that, is that you in a lot of the cases, it varies from state to state, but in a lot of the cases, you have to actually witness the crime.
Yeah.
You can't just be doing your own investigating and saying, "I think this is the guy that did that," and track him down. You know, you're not going to do that. But if you're there and you see a guy, like, say, purse snatch somebody, and they grab the purse and take off running, you can, you know, tackle the guy, and basically you're just holding him till the cops get there. But in effect, by you tackling him, you're making a citizen's arrest.
Yeah.
But the one thing you need to keep in mind is, sometimes you can only do that if it's a felony. And say this lady didn't have any money in her purse or something like that, that might be considered a misdemeanor. And then even if you were right, you're going to be wrong, because state law says it had to be the commission of a felony. And then, and the other thing is, you don't have the same immunity that police officers do. Police can make a mistake and arrest the wrong person, and they don't get sued necessarily. But you can't, if you're making a citizen's arrest and you grab the wrong guy, you better go get a lawyer.
That's right. It's good for my business.
Yeah.
I also saw some articles that are trying to compare these citizens' arrest laws to, like, the Stand Your Ground, the Castle Doctrine cases whenever you're in your own home. And to me, again, I see a bit of a difference here. In the, I think, like, if you're in your house and somebody breaks into your house, I don't think you have a duty to run away. Like, that's a place where you should be able to be there.
Right.
And so I think you have the right to defend yourself. Now, do I think that once the person leaves your house, you have the right to chase them down and give chase because they broke in and then arrest them yourself? No, I don't think you should do that either. I think that's not good. I think the right to defend yourself and that kind of stops at your porch or your curtilage.
Yeah, you don't want to go past your curtilage.
No. And this always brings to light one of my favorite things from law school, and one of your favorite early jokes from earlier episodes, the spring gun.
Yeah, the spring gun.
Do you remember what the spring gun is?
Yeah, that's the one that's loaded so that when the guy opens the window to come into your house, to sneak into your house, a gun fires and blasts his face off.
That's right. And the way the reason it's illustrated and so interesting is because what you're and this usually happens in cabins and places that are remote where nobody is. So what you're doing is you're using deadly force to defend your property. Deadly force is traditionally only allowed to defend yourself. So, well,
that's one of the things that surprised me, though, when I read this, is that in some states, you are allowed to use the proper force in making a citizen's arrest that is necessary, up to and including deadly force.
Yeah, and to me, that is just crazy.
I can't imagine you want to encourage your citizenry to shoot people that you think committed a felony or something like that. That's just a recipe for disaster.
See, and this is the problem I have with it. If you see somebody who was trespassing or possibly stole something or whatever, and you say, okay, I witnessed this, I think it's a felony, I'm going to go make a citizen's arrest. So you grab a firearm and you go to apprehend this person. Well, you're bringing a gun into that situation and potentially bringing the deadly force to that altercation. The person doesn't have that. And so this becomes a problem whenever you turn around and try to say, well, the person resisted me, so I had to shoot them because I was in fear for my life, which is that's exactly what they tried to say there in Georgia.
Well, sure. But, you know, the guy resisted you because you pulled a gun on him and he didn't. You weren't a police officer. You had no badge. For all he knew, he was being mugged.
Yeah. And, you know, I just don't know how you're able to say you're using self-defense once you're the one that brought the gun there. It just makes no sense to me. And there's not been this, you know, with regards to this case, there's not been any evidence that he had a weapon of any kind. So
no. You know, and I don't even think that's disputed. I think even the two fellas involved in it, they didn't try to say he had a weapon or anything. They just said he aggressively attacked the one that was holding a shotgun. How many people go aggressively attack somebody with a shotgun? I know they were wrestling for it, but I would say that he was somewhat provoked.
Probably. I mean, if you're running down a street and you know, a truck's following you and somebody jumps out with a shotgun, I mean,
Yeah. And he probably wasn't trying to wrestle it from him to shoot him. He was probably trying to save his own life. Probably trying to turn the gun away from him.
Yeah, I'm sure the guy said, stop or I'll shoot you.
Yeah.
So, you know, the sad thing is, too, is that if you follow the story a little bit, you've seen there is some video of him in a construction site almost right before this took place. So, you know, maybe he ran in there and checked out a construction site. But
there was a couple different things they theorized. One was he was getting water. So that he could, there was water somewhere around there, and that he was getting water from there to continue his jog.
Right.
But they agree he didn't take anything from there.
No. And that's the problem that you run into with these citizens' arrest laws. These aren't trained law enforcement officials. So maybe the guy did trespass. I think you can probably say he did trespass because he didn't have a right to be there, and it's a misdemeanor. You know, and even in some places, it's actually a felony to trespass on a construction site. But does that give you the right to chase somebody down with a gun and try to apprehend them because, you know, you think you're doing the right thing? I don't think it does.
Take a picture of them and turn that into the police and say, hey, this guy was acting suspicious. You ought to check him out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no reason why this guy's on foot. They couldn't have followed him and called the police and said, hey, I'm following this guy. He was in this facility. He was in this construction zone. He's turning down Second Street now. I'm following him. You know, I mean, that's if you're going to do that, that's the way you do that. You don't jump out and try to play Batman and apprehend the person. That just does not make any sense to me.
Right. Well, and if you saw the father that was involved in that incident, he had been removed from the ability to arrest people because of some complaints and some things that he had done and failing to meet gun range criteria and stuff like that before he left the police force. So he was not one that you would want in charge of that, I don't think.
No. Now the Georgia code, the way it reads, and again, each state's going to have its different one. It says, a private person may arrest an offender if the offense is committed in his presence or within his immediate knowledge. If the offense is a felony and the offender is escaping or attempting to escape, a private person may arrest him upon reasonable and probable grounds of suspicion. So that's the extent of the entire Georgia code on that. Not very long.
No.
Now, I will say this. If the offense is a felony and the offender is escaping or attempting to escape, a private person may arrest him upon reasonable and probable grounds of suspicion. So, if you see somebody in a construction site and they're in there and you know they're not supposed to be in there, that is probably reasonable and probable grounds. I think that probably meets that criteria. So, I mean, according to this, they maybe did have the right to try to arrest the person. Does that mean that I think they should have done it? No. I don't think this should be the law. But it looks like to me that, I mean, if that's what the way it does in fact read, that, you know, maybe upon reasonable and probable grounds of suspicion, maybe they did have that. I don't know.
Well, you can look at, were they trying to do the right thing? And no, I don't think they were trying to do the right thing. Any way you cut it down, what it came down to is he was African American. And that was why they made the decision that he was probably doing something he shouldn't be doing, because he was in that neighborhood. He'd been seen there before. And so, you know, he fit the description because he was African American.
Yep.
And that's, you know, that's what it comes down to. They can say that that didn't have anything to do with it, but, you know, I don't think they would have confronted a white person jogging through there the same way.
And you know what? That's probably the actual real problem with this entire situation, the way it was handled based upon the race. Because you're right. They probably would not have tried to do this to a white person going through the neighborhood.
And they probably wouldn't have grabbed shotguns to go after him either.
Well, I don't know. I have a feeling these people carry around shotguns all the time.
Well,
that's just my gut instinct.
I lived right down in that area for about 5 years, and there most of them did have pickup trucks with a shotgun rack in the car, a rifle rack in the car, and a dog box in the back.
Yeah. So, I don't know that these laws serve any real useful purpose in these days. I mean, originally this was something that was supposed to kind of help the sheriff and whatnot back in the days of yore, not now.
Well, basically it said you didn't have an organized police force back in those days, so there was lots of countryside that was basically unprotected, and you had criminals that roamed around. So you had to basically say the citizenry could get together and not let these guys commit crimes, and they could hold you until the police got there. So you were kind of an extension of the law.
Now, where this might make sense, I can see maybe Alaska. It's pretty remote. You might need to have a law like this.
Yeah. But, I mean, we still have it. And I was looking at this section that says use of force. It says, in general, a private person is justified in using non-deadly force upon another if they reasonably believe that such other person is committing a felony or a misdemeanor amounting to a breach of the peace, and the force used is necessary to prevent further commission of the offense and to apprehend the offender. The force must be reasonable under the circumstances to restrain the individual arrested. This includes the nature of the offense and the amount of force required to overcome resistance. In at least one state, a civilian may use reasonable force, including deadly force, if reasonable, to prevent an escape from a lawful citizen's arrest. But that doesn't make sense to me. So the guy's running off, you're going to shoot him in the back as he's running off because he tried to escape and you were making a lawful arrest?
No, because police officers don't do that.
I know, that's what I mean, but that's, to me, that's the way that's worded.
Yeah.
The guy's making an escape, so it's lawful to use deadly force. It shouldn't say that. The only reason you should be allowed to use deadly force is if you fear for your own life, if that guy pulled out a gun too or something.
Well, the whole problem comes in is that, okay, so I am going to make a lawful citizen's arrest. I've checked all my boxes. I'm 100% in the right, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So then I go to execute on this citizen's arrest and I have a gun, and then the guy starts fighting me. He's trying to take the gun from me. Well, you know what? At this point, I am scared for my life. This guy might take the gun and shoot me. So does that mean I have the right to shoot him then?
Well,
I don't think so.
If you're a private citizen entering into a situation like that, don't bring a gun in the first place. Cause that's a recipe for disaster again.
I agree. That's one of the problems I've always had with people that have concealed weapons permits and carry firearms all the time, is that if for whatever reason you do get into some sort of physical altercation with somebody, there's already a gun there. That's going to be a problem.
Here was a situation that wasn't quite as deadly that kind of says the same thing, because this wasn't nearly as serious and they're still giving the same advice. It said, this was a thing written into Reddit, and it said, can I perform a citizen's arrest on my neighbor for refusing to turn down his music at night? And the answer back was, playing loud music at night is classified as something like disturbing the peace or some similar minor offense. Many agencies routinely issue citations for this as opposed to arresting people. Making a citizen's arrest for an offense the police don't usually arrest for is not going to go over well. Also, in order to do this, you probably need to go onto your neighbor's property. While I'm not well educated on property law to know if this would be trespassing, if your intent was to make a lawful arrest, it's certainly going to muddy the waters in court. While there, you would be at a disadvantage, as your neighbor knows where other people to assist, weapons, and escape routes are, all things you probably don't know. You will be operating alone in an environment that would normally require at least two armed cops if they intended to make an arrest. And your neighbor's charge of trespass would probably be more black and white than your charge of disturbing the peace. So I will say, do not go in, do not make a citizen's arrest of your neighbor for his loud music.
I absolutely agree.
But there's something as simple as that, and they're advising you, you're in over your head. What does it mean when you're chasing somebody down the street with a shotgun?
Now, each state, as we said, has different laws, which talk about the different ways you're able to have these citizens arrest. And the laws vary regarding the amount of probable cause you have to have, how long you're allowed to hold them, different things like that. The law in Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin says that an arrest is allowed if a citizen personally witnesses the felony. Now, here's the odd one. California allows a citizen's arrest of a misdemeanor even if the person did not directly witness it. To me, it is very odd to me that California has this law, because California does not seem to be that kind of state. You know, this seems to be more of kind of a
liberal, laid back, hey, surf's yeah. up, dude.
Yeah, I just don't see it as that. But it's that's a pretty stiff penalty there.
Well, you know, even security guards or mall cops or whatever like that, theirs are considered citizens' arrests if they detain you for shoplifting or something like that.
Yeah.
That's basically a citizen's arrest, because they don't actually have the ability to arrest you. They just have the ability to detain you until the cops show up.
Well, and there's different exceptions too, for like shopkeepers and things like that. You're going out, you're getting a little bit out there as far as citizen's arrest. I mean, yes, technically it is a citizen's arrest, but there's other exceptions there. Because if you own a shop or something like that, and you see somebody steal something from your shop, it's a bit more black and white then, because they're in your business taking something away. So it's kind of a little bit of a different scenario than your citizen's arrest on the street. Like, I'm walking down the street and I see somebody bust open a parking meter. Excuse me, sir, that is not allowed. I am making a citizen's arrest.
Unless you give me half the quarters.
Yeah.
And also, you're probably not allowed to shoot them under either of those circumstances.
No, definitely not. You know, the thing is, too, is if you try to make the citizen's arrest, you could end up being sued for false arrest or different things like that. So, I mean, you're really just rolling the dice by doing this. It is inherently reckless behavior.
Yeah, about the only way that I see that makes any sense at all is like if a guy was like beating his girlfriend or something like that, and you stepped in and restrained him until you could get police there or something like that, because then you're keeping somebody from bodily injury or something like that, you know?
You're right. And you have hit upon what I believe to be the bright line distinction in all this madness. It's physical harm. It's something you're actually witnessing. It's not defensive property.
Right. Yeah, if you're defending somebody, either yourself or somebody else, from being injured, then you should be within your rights.
Do you know what the West Virginia law is regarding citizen's arrest?
No, I do not.
Well, we have a very odd citizen's arrest law in that it's actually not a written law.
Yeah?
There's no written law about it. It's part of common law, which has been cited in case law over the years.
Huh. But there's nothing that actually addresses it, huh?
Well, some of the cases talk about it. There's a case of State v. Horn, and this is kind of an interesting one, because a police officer who was off duty arrested somebody. And the court held that the officer had the same arrest power as that of a citizen when they were not acting in their official capacity. They were in their off-duty capacity. And it said that under the common law, a private citizen is authorized to arrest another person who is the private citizen believes has committed a felony. So that's the thing. It also says a police officer acting beyond his or her territorial jurisdiction retains power as a private citizen to make an arrest when a felony has been committed and the officer has reasonable grounds to believe the person arrested has committed the crime. So they're talking about, you know, felonies and you actually witness it. So that would be my probably safe explanation as to what citizens' arrest powers are in West Virginia.
But if it's a misdemeanor, you don't have that same ability.
Well, that's what you would think. But listen to this. That very same case, State v. Horn, goes on to read a little bit later on, and it cites to Allen v. Lipinski, which is a 1917 case in West Virginia.
1917?
Yep. It says, okay, a private person cannot justify an arrest made without warrant by himself or by an officer at his instance for a misdemeanor or felony unless the felony has actually been committed. So they again talk about misdemeanors and felonies. They're kind of muddying the waters there a little bit as I read that.
Well, I still didn't hear it say that a misdemeanor was okay to arrest somebody.
Well, it doesn't, but why do they even talk about it?
So that you'll know there's a difference and you can't just arrest them for anything.
I don't know.
Because I mean, like, isn't like a felony, it has to be like, say you steal something. Isn't it a felony if it's over a certain dollar amount and it's a misdemeanor under a dollar amount?
It is, but I mean, if they're stealing something, I mean, they don't have big dollar signs over them that you can readily ascertain exactly how much it is.
Yeah, but you better ask the clerk before you go chase the guy down. How much was that worth? $250? Okay, good. Over $250 is a felony. I can arrest him.
I don't know. My advice, if you're in West Virginia, you're thinking about citizen's arrest, don't do it. My advice is if you're a citizen of the world thinking about a citizen's arrest, don't do it.
Unless you're protecting someone from getting hurt.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, too, and this is for more of kind of a legal prosecution type argument, this can open up a lot of other problems for the case itself. So we have certain things in the United States, we call them constitutional rights.
I've heard of those before somewhere. And
the police have to follow these when they arrest someone, and if they don't, then any evidence they have can be thrown out. Any evidence they might find can be thrown out.
It's so, a fruit of the poison tree.
That's right. Fruit of the poisonous tree.
Yeah, that's right.
The tree's not poison. It's just poisonous.
Oh.
whatever that means.
So don't eat the tree, just the poisonous fruit.
That's right. But the question comes in is that if a private citizen violates someone's constitutional rights and then there's evidence found, can that evidence get introduced at trial because it was possibly illegally obtained? The defense attorney might file a motion to suppress the illegally obtained evidence. I mean, that happens all the time in cases. Motions to suppress are part of what you do leading up to trial.
Hmm.
So, you know, for example, the fruit of the poisonous tree, if a police officer is driving along and they see somebody with a taillight out and they pull the person over and then they get consent or they have reasonable suspicion to search the car and they find drugs, then that's okay. If the police officer just pulls somebody over because, I just had a feeling. That's not a valid traffic stop. Didn't have a reason to actually pull the person over. So any drugs they might find in the car after that, they don't get to admit to trial.
Well, I've seen how you fix that in movies. You just walk up there with your billy club and knock out the tail light before you approach the driver. Then you can tell him his tail light's out.
That's a classic TV trope maneuver.
Yeah, I've seen that happen a lot out there. So then it makes it okay.
Yeah. But, I mean, think about this. If they did arrest, say this Ahmaud Arbery thing didn't go down the way it did, and they actually did detain this guy and arrest him, and they found something that was from the construction site on him. Think about this. If they did something improperly, would that evidence even be able to come in?
Well, not
some other constitutional right.
Not only that, was it enough to constitute a felony? And what if he didn't have anything to do with that? And they could never find any evidence to tie him to whatever these break-ins were that were happening. Now you could charge those people with false imprisonment for grabbing him and detaining him.
Absolutely.
So, but at this point, he's not even getting a trial because they killed him. So these guys, they're not even really standing for anything unless they say that what they did was absolutely against the law. Because he may not have been the right person. They may have tracked down an innocent man.
I agree. And we'll never know. Justice will not be served by what took place.
Yeah, because there's not going to be anything to determine whether he was, you know, broke into those places or not.
Yeah. And again, I think if that video showed him kicking a window in, crawling through the window, ripping something off the wall, and leaving with it, I don't care. I don't think that gives them the right to go out and try to arrest him like that.
Well, I can tell you this. When I was building my house, there was a lot of times I pulled up here to see what they had gotten done that day, and there were people I didn't know walking around on the property. They were just they were just curious. They were just looking at it to see what the house was going to look like. And, you know, I didn't shoot any of them.
That's good, Tommy.
But the fact that he went in that house that was just a house under construction, you know, it's not a crime.
Well, it may have been a trespassing, but who knows? So the other thing too, that's kind of interesting. I don't know if you're familiar with this. You can actually, there are some states where you have private prosecution for criminal cases. Now, it used to be the law here in West Virginia that a private citizen could file a criminal complaint and start the whole criminal prosecution that way. Because now it has to be a sworn law enforcement officer to do it.
Before,
you know, I would have been able to file out some sort of sworn complaint against you saying you committed a crime. And then the magistrate would issue an arrest warrant and you'd have to come to court and defend yourself just because, you know, I'm a private citizen and I said that.
Yeah. Well, you go report somebody, like if you report somebody for running a red light, it'd be like they'd go and give them a ticket or something.
Pretty much, exactly.
But they don't do that.
No.
Because they're not going to do it just because you as another private citizen say so.
And again, to me, this private prosecution kind of goes hand in hand with the citizen's arrest. It stems from a time when you needed to have that because it was an era where there wasn't that many law enforcement officers and private citizens actually had to bring their own cases criminally to the court's attention. Mm-hmm. We didn't have the infrastructure we have in place now with regard to police, prosecuting attorneys, things like that.
Yeah. So there's no need for that now.
There isn't.
It's superfluous.
It is. Now, that's a little bit different than if private attorneys are appointed as special prosecutors for some cases. We're talking about actually just some random citizen off the street being able to walk in and say, hey, this guy did this. We need to arrest him and bring him to court. But, yeah.
But you still have to have evidence. You're not going to take it on one guy's word like that, because otherwise people that just had it in for you would go turn you in for stuff that you didn't do.
That probably has to happen. See the witch trials.
Hey, I came across one. It's a strange convergence of QAnon, citizens' arrest, and a dead mob boss.
Okay.
Said Anthony Camello wasn't there to whack a mob boss. He just wanted to detain him. At least that's the argument made in court documents recently filed by an attorney representing the 24-year-old construction worker who was charged in the murder of Francesco Frank Calli. Instead of that crime, Camello's lawyer claimed the QAnon-believing suspect drove to Callie's house in a rarefied stretch of Staten Island with a nobler pursuit in mind. He planned to perform a citizen's arrest on the reputed head of a major crime family, one he thought to be part of the nebulous deep state touted by conspiracy theorists. Technically speaking, the attorney for one of the higher-profile murder suspects in recent history was planning to claim his client was not guilty by reason of mental defect, the New York Times reported, but Camello's impending trial is highlighting the precarity of our current moment, with storied institutions like the rule of law and even the government itself seeming to erode before our eyes. In disturbing cases of legitimately outrageous elite conduct, like the Jeffrey Epstein saga, in which prosecutors reached a secret deal with a sex criminal whose past acquaintances reportedly ranged from Bill Clinton to Prince Andrew and Donald Trump, the far right has found fresh material for old conspiracies. That makes this an opportune time for many to explore what a citizen's arrest actually is and whether it could ever possibly be a good idea for someone, conspiracy fueled or otherwise, to attempt one. So this guy, he went in and killed this mob boss, and he said basically that he just was going in there to make a citizen's arrest. And the guy started to resist, pull out a gun, so he shot him 10 times to make sure that he wouldn't go away.
Again, not legal. Should not be legal. If it is legal, it shouldn't be legal.
But, I mean, I guess the thing is this guy that he shot, he was a mob boss, so he was, you know, they probably could find evidence to his illegal doings that amounted to a felony, and he probably was armed when this guy came in there. So when he shot him, he could say that he feared for his life. He used equal force. But how are we to know what was in his mind to know that was the reason he was there? Or is that just something they constructed to try to get him off the hook for what he did?
It doesn't matter. And the reason it doesn't matter is because the mob boss has certain constitutional rights. He's innocent until proven guilty. So this guy went in like Judge Dredd, judge, jury, executioner, and took care of business. He broke the law by doing that. There is no doubt in my mind. He trampled all over the Constitution. He took our American flag and wadded it up and threw it away. Because the mob boss has constitutional rights and protections just like anybody else, innocent until proven guilty.
And this
I don't
was
care
not,
if he is a mob boss or not.
Doesn't matter, huh?
No.
And this was not the first time that Camello had attempted some form of citizen's arrest either. He had tried with varying degrees of effort to detain New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio and two California members of Congress, Adam Schiff and Maxine Waters, all Democrats. The idea, however dubious, seems to be that Camello had no choice but to take matters into his own hands. So he had tried to citizens arrest different government officials as well.
Yeah, that guy has a mental problem and should have been an institution. And the fact that he is still out and around and was able to do this, there probably should be a lawsuit against whoever did not properly lock him up.
On one of the first three times, huh?
Yeah.
But I don't understand. How did he ever get in a room with a mob boss to be able to do that? In every movie I've seen, the mob bosses are very well protected.
Yeah, exactly. Every movie you've seen.
Yeah. Well, I haven't seen any real mob bosses. Where would I be to see a mob boss?
Maybe everywhere. You don't know.
Well, they weren't obvious.
what I'm trying to say is that this guy, this mob boss or alleged mob boss, I mean, he's just an average citizen, except the fact he's a mob boss. So he should get all the rights that go along with the Constitution.
Well, I don't think there's anything average about being a mob boss. Very few people obtain that occupation.
Well, that's true. It is, as they say, it's good work if you can get it.
Well, I don't know. Not when you have weirdos like that coming in.
Well, that's going to bring us to
legal brief. That's a little bit better. You notice I moved my microphone this week, so I thought you'd be able to see me doing it.
Yeah, I could see your mouth.
Okay. Well, you look like you've trimmed your beard back a little bit too, so I'm not looking up quite as deep a furry hole.
Yeah, I did have to trim it up a little bit. It's getting a little out of control.
Yeah, I'll say.
Still pretty burly, but whatever.
I couldn't tell which was the top of your head and which was the bottom.
So, legal briefs is where I asked Tommy different legal questions about some of the topics we talked about. So, let's start with common law. What is common law, Tommy?
Common law is law that has been derived from cases that have been decided. And that law is passed on down as the law because it's already been decided.
And the principle of stare decisis, what does that mean?
That was the painting that Vincent van Gogh did.
No, it basically means that I didn't talk about during this episode, so it's a bit of a cheap shot. But we'll say that was a bonus question. But stare decisis talks about how each case kind of builds upon itself, like each ruling stands for itself. If that makes sense.
The cheese stands alone.
The cheese stands alone.
I never understood that part of that nursery rhyme. The cheese stands alone.
Basically, whatever precedent there is for a case that you have to kind of follow the precedent, unless there is some good reason why you shouldn't follow the precedent.
Well, the precedent of the United States.
Okay, what is a motion to suppress?
A motion to suppress is exactly what it said. We're suppressing that evidence because it was obtained illegally or wrongly or trickily or something like that.
That's exactly right. I couldn't have said it better myself.
Even the trickily?
Well, I probably wouldn't have said trickily, but... And when are you generally allowed to use deadly force?
Only when confronted with deadly force.
That's pretty much it. Now, there are some times when deadly force is allowed, even if maybe the actual deadly force wasn't confronting you, but you had reason to believe that there might be deadly force. And that would be kind of more of like the Castle Doctrine or the Stand Your Ground laws. Because if somebody's breaking into your house and you're at home, you kind of can be safe to guess that they might do you physical harm. So,
well, that's true. Or if you saw some guy walking down the street and say, "Hey, I saw him on a poster in the post office, and it says he might be armed and dangerous. So I better shoot first and ask questions later."
Well, that's what Dirty Harry would do, but that's just a movie.
This here's a .357 Magnum, the most powerful handgun known to man. Now, I know you're asking yourself, did he shoot 5 shots or did he shoot 6? Well, I guess you just got to decide. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
To tell you the truth, in all this excitement, I kind of lost count myself. But I think that kind of goes back to what we're talking about. These citizens' arrests and these things like that, it goes to things we see in movies. And it's not things that need to take place in real life. It's not the society we want to live in.
Well, I don't think that citizens' arrests are at the proportion that they once were. I mean, probably back in the old West and things like that, you know, you had people making basically arrests to get rewards and things like that, you know. But I don't think that you see it that commonly these days, because I just think that, I don't know, I can't imagine there's too many people making that poor of a decision.
Exactly. That's what it boils down to, a poor decision. Like I said, you in this day and age, to go up and try to apprehend somebody, you'd have to have a screw loose. I can't imagine who would want to do it.
Yeah, they're not going to take to that kindly.
No. I mean, the only time I could ever see myself in a situation where this might happen is if I'm like in a restaurant or something and somebody just starts beating the brakes off somebody and I have to try to defend somebody else. You know, that's the only possible reason I could see that even coming to happen.
But even at that, are you actually going to try to restrain the guy and hold him there? Or are you just going to try to stop him from doing what he's doing and get him away?
Well, if it gets to the point where I'm having to intercede into it, they're probably not going to get up.
Well, you hope.
No.
But sometimes they carry a cue stick and you don't see them coming.
That's true. But I would probably hold them to the ground or they would not get back up.
Well, I would think the first thing I would do is just make sure they quit hurting whoever they're hurting. And then after that, it's kind of up to them. Are they going to stick around or are they going to go away?
Well, the best way to make that sure they stop hurting the person they were hurting is to put them on the ground and hold them there.
And then if they decide that they're not going to run away, then I guess you just give them the Dirty Harry that says, "Go ahead, make my day."
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude. Hello, and welcome to Tommy's Random Thought. Today's random thought is the new normal. The new normal is a phrase that gets a lot of press these days. There is a new normal for education, shopping, eating out, going to the doctor, attending any large event such as a concert or sports, or really pretty much everything we do. Some say until there is a vaccine, we will have to modify our usual behaviors. Some have said even the vaccine will not suffice, as the virus will mutate and keep coming back like the seasonal flu in second and third waves. The truth is, nobody knows anything. They can make some educated guesses, but nothing is a fact. Some things just can't survive the supposed new normal. Sporting events are not the same in an empty stadium. Not only is it not the same for fans, it's not the same for those who play the games. I've heard football and basketball coaches talk about having to bring your own energy when they play at venues that are not very well attended. Whether the crowd is for you or against you, it feeds the performances and the way a team responds to adversity or good fortune. It is all part of what makes it exciting. Concerts are another. Sure, you can just watch the artist perform on stage, on TV, or online in an empty building. The music is played the same, and you can probably see even better than if you were actually there. But there is nothing that compares to that excitement of actually being there and singing and dancing along with a favorite band or singer. Large festivals like Burning Man or South by Southwest or Comic Cons would be virtually impossible. If you limit the attendance, then you limit the experience. For most, that means don't waste your time. It won't be worth going. Even on a local level, we have Chili Fest, a hot dog festival, the Rails to Ales craft beer festival. These events are always packed, and besides being a good time, they raise money for charities. I know this may sound petty, but these are the things that make a community a place you want to be a part of. When the powers that be first sold us on this shutdown, they said we have to flatten the curve being the wave of infections. This is so we don't overwhelm the healthcare system so that those that get sick can be properly taken care of. No one ever said it is to stay in until the virus is completely eradicated. Somehow, that seems to be the message they are trying to put out now. Yet the hospitals in our area are ghost towns, and thousands of employees have been furloughed, and our hospitals are mostly sitting empty. In our state, it was already something like 45% of the residents work while 55% don't. That number now is probably like 80% don't while 20% do. I say we need to strive for herd immunity if we are truly going to defeat this virus. I believe the worst is behind us, and while we will still have cases, we need to get more people that have already had it than have never had it. That will slow the spread because you will have those that already had it shielding those that have not. What I am saying is, I don't want to accept a new normal. I want the old normal back, and I'm not ready to concede it. This has been Tommy's Random Thought.